to start with our meeting, I just want to welcome the team from the department led by the DG. We heard that you were having another meeting prior to this one, but we really appreciate that you made time to come so that we can deal with this matter. We have already paid on your behalf in your absence. We were accommodated in our prayers because this was our first meeting in this year. It was important for us to do that so that we invite the Almighty to be part of our program throughout the year. DG, we really appreciate your time to come to this meeting, but just to convey to the minister and the deputy that we are missing them. We had some discussions just before this meeting that we are really missing them. As politicians, we do want to interact with them at this level, not only to meet in bigger meetings. It assists us because we have an opportunity to interact directly in this small meeting session. If the minister is not available, we will appreciate that she delegates the deputy minister. But at least there must be a politician because we find ourselves interacting or trying to take decisions with you, which might be a change at a later stage when you bring the minister. So if you can just pass that message to the minister for us, and they have to come. We are going to be straight to the state. At least we're starting last year, we just said let's find our feet, but now we're seeing how things are done and what is happening. If they can just assist us in doing that, one of them should be part of the meeting. We are not particular because we know that ministers are very good. We have requested this meeting as a select committee. We acknowledge that the department has done very well in terms of delivery of housing. Building more than 3 million houses is not a task though. We really appreciate that. And repeating what you've been saying, said on the media that we are the only country in the world that is providing free housing. And we do notice that there has been improvement in terms of quality and the size of the houses. But as we know that in projects like this, especially where you don't have experience, where you cannot benchmark what has been done, what worked, what did not work, you will always come up with some challenges. Challenges that you must find on your feet how to deal with them, because we are the only country that is doing that. The issue of the waiting list, that is what we call it. You might have another name in your case. There are people who are still saying they've been on the waiting list since 1994. How do we deal with that? Without accusing the department or whoever, as I said, there is no way we can benchmark on this. We're just learning on it. The backlog. We've built more than 3 million houses. How many houses are still to be built? Do the people having houses really deserve to have those houses? Or they've been hijacked by other people? Jumping the queue? Sometimes we get pressure. We have a waiting list of people who have been waiting for a long time. Now you have these people who are protesting, blocking the road because they want houses, defying. And you want to solve that problem by so doing. You are now jumping the queue. Those who are supposed to vacate, who have been on the waiting list for a long time, are now left behind. How do we balance the two? And there are those who are illegally occupying houses or qualifying or deserving beneficiaries. How do we deal with those things? And the issue of corruption, something that we cannot ignore from the department, from the public, because it takes two to tango. Our officials will not be corrupt if the public is not corrupt. How do we deal with that? And then finally, the Thai credit. These houses that you are building, in fact, we are giving property to our people, people who never had houses before. But the government, we are giving them houses. But do they take, do they have Thai credit? How do we deal with the issue of Thai credit? Because in some instances, we find that Thai credit are with the department, some are in provinces, some are with the contractor. How do we manage that? I'm sure this is one of your presentation will take from what I'm saying, that this is a new thing altogether. We are all learning. We are bound to have such challenges. So I will give it to, hand over to you, DJ. I don't know who will be doing the presentation, but basically that is what we are expecting as a committee in terms of this meeting.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members of the Select Committee on Social Services, good morning. It's a great pleasure that you have invited us to come and present on this very important strategic area of our work. And we appreciate that. I must apologize that this meeting has been put together in a very bad day. The human settlement committee today left my colleague and continuing with the other presentations. But it's the work of government and we are trying to do the best we could. I must apologize for the minister. She's also in a cabinet committee meeting where she's also accounting on outcome aid together with my CEO who was with me this month. So I'm also quite in the apology. That's what she did as we speak. The Deputy Minister, she is probably going to be joining us in the next 5 to 10 minutes. She said in the other meetings, I must go. She will stay for a while entertaining the questions on the presentation that she was doing. But she will be joining us. As I was saying, she indicated that she will be joining this short opportunity meeting. So I apologize for the concerns. So we share the opening remarks that we have made, and we have made a very good presentation together. That's so interesting. I like the way we are speaking together. But before I do that, Chair, with your permission, I'd like to introduce the team from families, the red team, and the space that we have taken. If you don't mind, can I start with that?
No, you can do that.
Chair, I'm having officials of the department with me. I'm saying it because we also have human settlement administration that we deal with, which is AAB. And Brian will introduce his team. Brian Chadwell is the CEO of AAB. As you know, that in the last 3 years, we have taken over the running of AAB. It used to be a DTI institution. And because of human settlement mandate that we have extended, AAB is now part of human settlement institution in terms of the law. So they are reports to our minister. So we have inherited them as part of our organizational establishment as human settlement. And the CEO is just trying to who took over after that process of transition to human settlement place. He will introduce his team and I will introduce what is his role in terms of the work that we are doing, especially on the assignment of citizenship. Let me introduce my official head of the Rwanda Post. Rwanda Post is the chief director in the office of the meeting. So some of the operations in my office, with the secretariat, when you start calling me, he's in charge of my office and the chief director. And then we have Mr. Baba, who is the chief director for IT. Division of the organization, which deals with the issue that we have raised in terms of our registrar of our HSS system, responsible for data for all housing projects, for all allocations as well. The department joins with us. She's with the director of the state, who is also reporting to some of the same unit, who will also be doing the part that we have come up with a day in this course. So that we all have some questions. You can introduce your team, then I'll explain the different roles that you will be here for today for the presentation, for the first actually day, the first course of the presentation.
Thank you very much, DJ.
Who are you introducing?
Then I have with me our present operations executive, Mr. Anton Aronson.
Honorable Deputy Minister, I had already sent a message for you. Fortunately, you are here. Can we find, conclude your... Okay. Well, thank you very much. As DG, you reminded, I think we all know the Deputy Minister.
Mm-hmm. No, because we're coming late, coming from the portfolio.
We got to Amorosi. Mm-hmm. Can we quickly introduce ourselves, and then I'll come back to you. My name is Casey Lamini, chairperson of the Slack Committee for Social Services, of which Human Settlement is part of the five departments that we have in this committee. It's Human Settlement, Health, Social Development, Home Affairs, and Water and Sanitation. So now you understand why you are not in your meeting, some of the strategic meetings. Okay, I will move this direction.
I am the next one, Chairperson of Education and Recreation, which encompasses
I'm sure my team is successful. Good morning. I'm Tabitha Pedro, Economic Advisor for the Commission.
Good morning. Marcel William, Committee Secretary for the Commission.
Good morning. Mkululi Molo. I'm also a representative for the Commission.
Good morning.
My
name is Constance Ombari. I'm a political leader.
Okay. Am I missing? Okay. No, thank you very much. Oh, well, the 50 minutes are over. Okay, CJ. Come on, let's go.
Thanks a lot, Mr. President. My name is Savani. The name is Zubi. I work for the Department of Human and I will be
Can we ask the same?
Yes. My name is Zubi Kosha. President.
Okay, no, we had started without the introduction, Honorable Deputy Minister, but just to say one thing that we mentioned earlier, that we will really appreciate if one of you is part of our meetings, because we are politicians. We will really appreciate to communicate with politicians. Yes. We know that you are very busy, but if you could just see who is attending in our meetings. We usually do avail our programs well in advance so that you can put yourself, put them, our program in your education. CJ, can we proceed where we left?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Yeah. We have separated our presentation into two parts as per your request, Chairperson. The first part deals with titles for the program. We have taken through the guidance on the leadership of our minister a decision to allocate this task into a competent entity within the human performance framework. And we identified EAB as Ryan and the team to be the ones that are going to be doing this exercise together with the department and provide us with a certain kind of expertise that is required in dealing with this particular program. We unfortunately have to just close the little bit so that we can see the information. The second part, Chairperson, will deal with the allocation component, and the department will use that particular component. So with your permission, we'd like to start with the second evaluation program, just to put you into speed where we are, where have we been, and moving forward, what measures are we putting in place to do this? We can go to the money slide file so that we need to just go to the money slide. We are going to go to vision, mission, and all that. But I think what's important is the money that you are having and what vision, what you are doing, but just for the benefit of the community, and then thereafter we'll go straight into the presentation. With your permission, Chair, I'll ask the CEO to
We are providing the presentation to all the members and
just raise your voice for me.
Yes. The Chair, we have provided the presentation. And I will then just go through the two items of the presentation. So as you see is that the election manifest of it was given to the 14 national sessions that would eliminate the backlog of titles. The need for home owners in the property market will receive the title not only a happy letter or a key, but will actually receive a physical title of the result. We also understand that the NCFS workshop within the department is an integrated delivery mechanism for the department for the next 5 years over the electoral cycle to ensure that we eradicate the titled Battle of the Post, the pre-94 stuff, and also the post-94 stuff. And then important for the department, the Ministry Budget on the Street, specifically to prioritize the pre-94 stock, but then also the current post-94 stock ensure that we reach this access into the container beneficiary will tap into the benefit. Specifically, the institution of the State Board, which is present to assist with that, and the leadership of the region, when we look back over the years, just in the last 20 years, we are aware that we built about 3.8 million houses, and that figure, 1.4 million of those houses, the RDP market and the DNG market, we received their title. It's very important for us to know what the figure is, and that is the information that we have for 2011. When we look at the behavior of what has happened with those transactions, we can see that about 91,000 or 6% of those properties that did in fact receive the title deed have changed ownership. So someone has sold the property to the normal process, to the legal channel, and the title deed has changed hands from the official owner to the next person, and that generated a revenue of 12 billion rand. We do understand that there is a value creation that could happen if one uses assets as collateral or a poverty alleviator or a wealth creator. We're also aware that in certain instances there were low bank financing involved in some of those transactions, and that generated additional work and economic activity in the banking environment. So we saw what the average sales price of those units was. 94,000, and the selling price was average 54,000, and then thereafter, after 2009, the same units were selling for 161,000. We are very aware that those prices are now, those units are selling between 250,000 rand, and you can see there has been a very positive increase that the investments have done in the lives of the beneficiaries. So we have to look at the value proposition. How do one value your title and how do you benefit from it? So the first thing you need to do is you have to protect your rights to property. You have to know that you are full title to that property. Your home is an asset, but the message that we give to individuals is that they should not sell their property. They should buy the property of their neighbor if their neighbor is physically wanting to sell the property. We actually encourage them to hold on to this asset. This asset can become part of the inheritance of future generation, but also investment income for them. We also talking to them about what's the difference between you own your property versus if you rent a property. If you are a tenant versus an owner. So you have to look at how to create value out of the debt capital when you look at some of the retailships. What happens in the secondary market where takers and offers, you compare the two and see where in the formalized market certain transactions happen with specific item and wealth has always been created through ownership of property all over the world. And that's important for us to say that even if you pay specific market to this asset, it should also be a property mediator and also a wealth creator. Banks and all lenders are able to access new markets, and then there are also additional benefits for all the other loan tenants. In terms of the key message is that property should be owned, kept, and created as an asset kept for yourself and not actually sold in this country. So we are also trying to maybe show an indication of what happens in the market that we currently have some information about. And as you see, Chair and Oliver, where all those square blocks are, and you look at specific problems and they call that a figure 10, we can see all those square blocks are indicated to us in the year 2030. How many transactions are happening all over the place? There are large amounts of transactions happening in the market. People are selling properties. And then we're also seeing some of those properties there are as well that the state agents are selling. We can see there's a kind of shaded area on the top part where you see Ushlanga. There's a lot of concentration of state agents there. And some of the other areas in this red kind of color are indicating to us the high density of settings. They also play a role in that. But then we're looking at the other areas with our transaction bank will come to do so just without the involvement of the state agents, which is fine. But we have to have the same information with detail about specific areas that we've done investment for RBC houses and BNG houses to see what is the activity happening around that. And within Western State Province, we can also see what is the performance and the movement in the specific area. We need to know in the areas where we invested human settlements and basic contribution of subsidies, what is the movement of the property, if any, what are the other well-trained activities, including rentals that happen in a specific area. So if you go and look at every other province, you can see in East London, less activity driven by state agents, but a lot of other transactions happen. And you should be able to look at that province and provide all of that information. Just use one or two of the provinces to give us an indication of what we're looking at. So when you look at the value proposition, we also look at what are the risks and the threats related to this, also what are the legal consequences. So what happens in the instance where there is informality? And we have so many instances we've heard where individuals have sold this RBC house, the BNG house, to another individual, either by going to the police station, signing an affidavit, and that person has sold their house to another person. What it actually sold is they sold occupancy. But we also found that some of them do not have the title deed. So they are not following the process, they are being beneficial, they've got the key, they have to get them, and they're not sponsoring them. And that is one of the challenges that we create different problems, then we have to go back either into the check in the background, or the check not in the background, and if you are going to solve that problem in the settlement, the problem is continuing to grow. So we have found out that there are many business people that are buying these units without title, without documentation, and creating those and putting parameters for parts of the process. It's important for us to look at how do we deal with those specific issues, how do we consume education and the minister's charge to look at things specifically. We're also looking at when we're talking about confirming your ownership, it's not the owner itself. You must understand that looking at asset building process, you must include the likelihood of the individual affected by that, and then also it must create again, a beneficiary after the interest period sees that they have more disposable income, they would like to buy into a different area, then they should be able to have collateral and the equity that grow in their property, so they should be able to do that. So this is a means to create an in that a changing of ownership happens. And we can analyze that. The previous unfair practice happens that individuals are selling their house for 50,000 of them, the same house, the department is selling under them, say, creating that house and then it's sold for a amount much less than what it's worth. And then we say people are using the benefit of their house in the industry they choose to sell their houses. Our baseline is if you do not sell your house, you may be done by the house. We're also looking at the vision. I'm not going to go through all of the details of the vision going in the process, but it's obviously what we're trying to achieve is 2 to 6 years. So we are very aware that that instance is in the communal land where the achievement was made like the fourth and last place of the land, that there is no title that exists, but they're also looking at intervention for that. But in broad terms, we can see where we are now. How many other opportunities have we done? How many titles have been delivered based on our 2011 report? And then we look at the subsidies that have gone into the rental community assistance of 400,000 units. What is the nature of the problem? And I think this is a question that we are trying to resolve. To find that answer, what is the ratio and the extent of the problem? How many factors are currently now available or not? So, for us to do that, committee, we look at the various provinces. How many units have been produced in different cases? How many have been produced in KZN? And then we also try and match how many title deeds follow those units. So we have the number of units produced in Limpopo. When you look at Limpopo specifically, it looks like they are very much behind most of the other provinces. But the biggest contributor there is that there's been a lot of investment in the cheap land, in communal property land. So those units are not going to be advertised, but we also have to find proactive solutions to provide equity to those units. So we look at all the various provinces, Northern Cape, Northwest, and we can see there is a lag between the number of units versus use. And what we'd like to do also to try and look at from 1995, Chair, to 2009, how many units have been delivered per year, and also how many samples units? How was it that? What's the census of the units that have been delivered far beyond the information of the sample units? And then we can also learn from the past what we need to do differently. We can also see that where there have been specific changes in the approach, how they have an impact on the type of the delivery process, where we can link specific program things, we can follow a specific process, provide the unit, so we can get a piece of what individual needs to get into the unit, and then we do the paperwork after that. So it was a bit of a lag and trended more and more. So 2009, it actually became quite deep that the lag was so significant. But it's also what came up with it. So looking at the current challenges, it's important for us to ask the question, if you look at the problem, where is the challenge? Who is the capacity of the municipality challenges? Do the municipality have the capability, are they equipped to respond to the specific items? They are having a lot of units that they own in the rental environment in 1994. They've also invested a lot in specific municipal areas. So what equipment do they need? Is there a specific reason why a municipality would not want to take facilitate approach with the province, transfer, leapfrog, build land where the investment has been made into the name of the municipality and from the municipality into the name of the owner, the beneficiary? And we ask the question, well, now currently the province is paying the rent related to that land. Is there concern that once the property goes into the hands of the beneficiary, that the rent base of the municipality will be reduced? And we ask this question, we also look at what is the provincial department's capability and capacity. Do they need additional capacity when it comes to processing facilities and the process regarding that, or matching the excellent delivery of housing on the one side, but then also do the back office work in terms of working with the key stakeholders in terms of getting the process finalized. We also look at other processes where the rectification of the 294 houses and some of the mud houses, impact the arrears on rate and delaying of transfer. What impact that has the bigger problem? When you also look at the attorney's office, how they are supporting and impact to that of what is the impact on that for you members. So analyzing that, we also look at instances where the house has been burnt and standing there, but they are delayed in this population. The council is a general plan, there are other items that happen in another office, another process that is not translating into actually able to subdivide the land and provide the company. Also, are the delays in some conveyances? We understand the private sector is clearly that low, and sometimes the bulk of work that is provided could be delayed due to another relationship or other work agreements between yourself and the conveyance that the province could be a problem, and then the whole work will become halted because of another issue. So there are some other factors that also have an impact, but we've looked all the kind of problem items in terms of project management. Is there a process failure in the service of the process? Before project can be closed, that could be one of the completing steps. Is there a problem in terms of that? And we also see whether when we look at the beneficiary administration, is there something that is different in terms of that? We look at the key stakeholders, we know that the youth register nationally is very public as a key stakeholder. In the first, there are a lot of schools, they were arguing about is the problem the youth office or not. What should the state attorney office do differently? How should the municipality assist us more? We also look at the human system of policy to look at the various items that we can improve on. We also look at the various arguments, and I'm not going to go through all of the details. But we all know why home ownership is an important asset. So we need to come to closure to bring that into two focuses. One is how do you deal with 394 stock and how do you deal with post 94 stock? What various interventions should be placed for dealing with the 394 stock? And what should be differently with the post 94 stock? We want to look at the current project, which is the oil time situation, where we deliver 1.5 million new housing opportunities in the next 5 years, but at the end of that period, we increase the backlog of the priority for the last previous years, but also to look at new policies and reform of how we can improve the process of bulk registration and other solutions in terms of that. So when we look at the progress today, We've done a lot. I think the minister made a decision in terms of that. We've already completed an inspection report, indicating where exactly the problem is to the region and to the minister. We're also trying to finalize the scoping exercise because we need to know exactly the numbers, what is the amount of units in that problem, and what is the backlog of the physical plant. We're also finding out if the problem of the size is between the department, provincial, and the conveyancer to analyze that. So then, for what we're doing, that is in the way we have a clear understanding of that, and then we also go to the process to ensure that we achieve the goal of the mission. It's important for us to do the numbers for it, to do the institutional capacity for it, or just to see what that implementation process will know, what is the cost of that implementation. So we already have an idea of our pre-exercise. If we look at every one of the provinces, what are they saying in terms of 3 and 4 stops? How far they are with their backlog? How far are they in their backlog in terms of close 94 stops? And the other thing is, some of the provinces, we can provide the information, accurately or not accurately, or we can do a support to give you a bit of a glimpse of what you have received already, but we'll finalize it in terms of the scoping exercise. So it's very brief in terms of the scoping exercise, we need to confirm the numbers here, to understand what is the practice of each institution, and also what practice we implement to solve the problem. In terms of reporting the process, Chair, we have to DG the EAB to set in MINIMAC and will provide responses to all those questions in the presence of the Minister and the Deputy Minister or the MEC. But that will be prepared by a national steering committee where all of these agencies of the province will be present. All of the key stakeholders, including the Deputy Registrar, including the Mayor General, including the housing entities that need to be involved in the process, to set up a national steering committee and already confirm the backlog issues. That is also then replicated in each province. Each province has a provincial steering committee, also chaired by the HMP in the province, with all the key stakeholders. So we can ensure that at the time when we go into MINIMAC, then we can provide credible answers to the MEC and the HMP of each province with the force in terms of their amount and the backup items. So these steering committees are already in force, and we make sure that they're all the key stakeholders. Because somehow we have the relevant people of COFTA, relevant people of the Department of Civil Land Report. We have a partner in the Black Conveyance Association who provides a bonus scheme in terms of the entire process. We have all of the partners, also the province. So when we look at the critical perspective, I think the total cost of this restoration will be determined if we have an answer once we have the full backlog of the process. In terms of the policy in the process, we can see that the current is the enter clause. The audit will indicate to us how many properties we sold within the 8 years and how many properties can be sold outside of the 8 year period and what is the practical people have been when we do the beneficiary and the occupancy audit. How many retained the beneficiary are closing in those units and if they vacated those premises within the 8 years. Also to look at the beneficiary administration in terms of which issues where there are the dispute between the occupiers and the actual legal beneficiaries. The instances where there are matters where the beneficiary is passed on, and then the state is in a process with the master of the natural resource, the master of the part of the discussion, but we can also pass that process in terms of some of the issues we find in terms of that process. How do you deal with issues of pride with someone that I've been joking before this aspect of not near for 15 years? And how do we deal with the finance in terms of that? In terms of the critical success factor, we look at the project management, which professional bodies should play a role, and are really committed to the process. In terms of the broader human system of policy, in terms of institutional resilience, what is the resilience and part of national process and local government? And that is what the idea of the commitment of national province and local government in terms of the process. We know that this critical sectors will be where all the related parties are all working together, and that is what we have found, that the these offices have indicated the willingness and they made the systems available to fast track any of the backlog items in the RPC and the DNG market where they have to be registration. Also secondly, they've also made available in terms of the new
identified many opportunities that we should be able to use those things very possible in terms of ensuring that these turnarounds are going to be through national decisions that just been accepted and supported taking in terms of the process going forward. So, as honorable members, we have tried to provide a project plan to give some indicative data that we would like to achieve. And when we're looking at pre-94, we would like to have the entire pre-94 soft unit concluded by March 2017 in terms of the post 94 stock to ensure that we conclude the entire process by March 2018, a year before the close of the electoral process. And that's when we also know if there are still items in the market offered at the very low, or there are other items in the market that we want to have to work with the people. In terms of the current baseline process, to ensure that all of the policies in terms of understanding the student corporation going to run such a fashion and won't create the problem 5 years down the line. We need to look at how do we deal with communal property recognition to occupy the main issue of opinion. If there are mechanisms that we can use, and that needs to be a discussion of all the key stakeholders in terms of us. In terms of us, I think importantly is to go through a structured process, making sure about the beneficiary information, and set up all the institutional engagement that we already have, making sure that the pilot initiative that we already have provides information while we're doing the process. So we can provide 6,000 units that we are putting through a pilot process, actually achieving the same outcome with a 394 hospital in the specific process going that we can learn from the future units up in the Kofa area. I think about 4,300 units in a specific area that we can put through the process so that we can actually see what we need to learn from that and actually achieve that. And then we have another 6,000 units in the partnership with the for the housing that we can see it can be. And those are kind of issues that we can more as we can actually find some of the solutions that we roll out to be the plan in terms of them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. DG, I don't know whether you want us to check to the next presentation before we start.
Sure, we can move forward.
Related to the National Housing Needs Initiative, that's how we refer to it. The
the ministry referred to it as a credible database, and some people still refer to it as waiting list or demand database. It's all the same. It's just different words used by different people in different parts. I will briefly provide you with a background and a history, where this started, what is the current situation, how is our approach to develop an application, because there's a lot of questions to say, have you consulted with this role player, have you consulted with that role player? We will explain how we've done this, how we have implemented the National Housing Needs Register, the different roles and responsibilities to make this work, because we can't do it alone from the national department. We're quite dependent on our provinces and the various municipalities and metros. What's the benefit? How does this all link up to the delivery cycle? How we deliver houses on the ground for our citizens? And what the phase is, just to show you there is something and how it looks like. And then the allocation guidelines. Okay. How do we select? If there's 1,000 people in a specific area, how do you select 500 households in a fair and transparent and auditable manner? That's why instability needs register. So I'll try my best to share this with the current constraint generator. We've had the previous minister, it was then a minister to students as well, in 2008, say, we need to look at the way how we allocate housing opportunities due to a lot of issues around maladministration and fraud. So the minister already in 2008 started with this process, and that's when we also started with the development of the allocation guidelines and with the system, our IT system, to assist with this whole allocation process. What we focus on, that was very clear, made clear to us, is to say we must make sure that every single housing opportunity that's been allocated is done in a fair manner, in a transparent manner, it must be auditable, and the people, our citizens, must have confidence in the process on how housing opportunities are allocated. So as I went back after the minister in 2008, the previous minister, Sakwale, requested for the development of a register. That can be started in encouragement as the National Housing Needs Register. So it enables citizens to register their need for adequate shelter. Those citizens that go and register their need for adequate shelter, so they can go to any office, they can go to a municipality, they can go to a provincial office, and they provide the people with some details about their household. How many people in the household? What's the age of the children? Do they have access to water, to electricity, to sanitation? What is their income? All that detail is getting captured, and that's why we call this a register, because we're setting up a profile of that specific household. Then as well, we say, okay, we need to look at the criteria on how housing opportunities are allocated. And then the National Housing Needs Register was launched in 2010 during the minister's budget speech. As we always do, we improve based on the feedback that we have received. And the Deputy Minister was actually quite part of this process as well in 2010. We added new functionality currently. We make now sure that the needs register as an application, as an IT application, can be used on your smartphone, or on a tablet, or on a laptop. So a field worker, that's the people that can go to a household and collect this information, has the ability to do it from his or her cell phone or laptop or any other device. We've also been building in an SMS service that will enable us to communicate with our citizens at a household level. For example, we must always make sure that their data is relevant, their household data that's on the register, because we need to be able to contact them again later on to say, you have been allocated to this project. The chairperson referred to people that have been on the waiting list for quite a long time and have not been assisted. One of the reasons, based on our understanding, is it's very difficult to contact those households again. So we said, go in an SMS service to enable us to say, please come and update your information if your situation has changed. Or we can say to them, you're now allocated to a specific project where you will be assisted with a housing opportunity and somebody will contact you to complete the subsidy application form. That's some of the functionalities that we have added or included on the links register. We also have a linkage now with the housing subsidy system. The housing subsidy system is where people, it captures that have completed a subsidy application form. That means a province or municipality has approached them and to ask them to complete a subsidy application. So they will now be being verified to see if they qualify for a subsidy. There's a difference between the two. The National Housing Needs Register, who registered your need for adequate shelter, and we will use the allocation guideline to select you to complete the subsidy application form to benefit on a specific project. So it's very important that we know the difference between the two of them. There was also some minor enhancements. Currently we're busy with the testing. We want to release in the next 2 months. We will go to the provinces and retrain all their users and the municipalities, and then we can also make use of this new functionality. How did we approach this? We made sure that we consulted with the provinces and the municipalities to say, what do you want to see on this application, the technical specifications, what's developed based on the requirements, the questionnaire and the allocation guidelines. If I may, 1 minute standstill on the questionnaire. That is where we collect, ask specific questions about the household. It is very similar to the census questionnaire that we all completed a while ago, but it's just more specific information to assist us with the change from housing to human settlement so that we can engage with all the other departments in the social sector. Then as well, what we've done, quite a few municipalities and provinces, I can use Gauteng as an example. You have something that they refer to as the demand database. Gauteng as a province human settlement approached the national department and requested us to take all the records from their demand database and to transfer it to the National Housing Needs Register. So currently Gauteng is utilizing the National Housing Needs Register. It's running well in the other provinces as well. We train, we assist where we can. How do we approach current waiting lists, where there's records within a municipality? What we do is via the province, we go to the municipality, they provide us with a copy of those records. We look at the records, we do analysis of this record, we keep them a report back, and if it's possible, we will take those records onto the National Housing Needs Register, where one field is very important for us, and that is the date that the person, the household, the citizen, registered his or her need for adequate shelter on that specific waiting list at the municipality. So we make sure that that is available as well. From a business perspective, we are from IT, so we're quite comfortable with what we've done from an IT perspective, but as usual, there's a big role for business to play in this. And that's where business must help, and they assisted to say a communication plan. We need to make sure that the citizens understand what is happening here, that we do not create confusion, that they do not understand the difference between registering my need for adequate shelter and applying for a subsidy where I will benefit from a product at the end. And this, how will we implement this municipality? You get big metros, you get your smaller municipalities, you get your rural municipalities. How do they communicate and ask the citizens to come and register their needs? Is it a mass registration, or do they say, people in this ward, you come on Tuesday and we will capture your information? So that's all about how do a municipality approach to implement this process. There must be an owner for this process in the municipality and at the provincial level as well as at the national level to make sure that IT address the needs of business and that we enable the requirements of business. extent you have your data captured, those are the people that sit behind the computer and ask the system certain questions and capture it on the system. So it's really important to have data captured, as well as people to help with inquiry. Quite often the citizens want to know what's happening, where am I, what have you done, how does my record look like, my information, and a toll-free number or a way that they can contact the municipality to obtain an understanding of what is happening with their record. We also do, this is close link between province and national. We have training, we understand this, the captioners need to be trained, they need to be overview sessions for management. We do all that, we look at the quality of the records and do any issues of attention of the provinces. We can assist them if we have found a support, if they want more, to provide them with that specific information. So from an IT perspective, we make sure the NIS register is really smart, it's a web-based application, it looks like your online banking. There's no installation, if you know the web address and you have a password and a username, you can access it. What we do at the national department, we assist with a communication plan. We help and we advise on how to municipalities on how to implement it. We try to help them to determine the number of staff that they require, in fact, how many data capturers based on the number of households in your municipality. There's champions at provincial and municipal level that we identify as we create some workshops to make sure we have the same basis. And we maintain the allocation guidelines as well from a national level. From as well, we provide all the IT resources, so we make sure the application is there from national. We provide training on the application. We make more technical, we make sure the service is there, the licenses is there, all the connectivity is there. So we provide a full service to our provinces and municipalities. If I go back to the NIS register, we need to answer the question, what is the long-term, the medium to long-term benefit for the country if we continue with the National Housing NIS register? We will also have a better understanding of the country's housing needs and backlog. Because it's on a household basis, we can ask people to come and register to maintain your information. We will be able to plan and budget better, because we will know exactly where is the need in a specific community, and we will not do it on a huge need. We will know the profile of the household, and it will enable us to provide to the household what they ask for. Sometimes I think we are very guilty to assume that we understand the needs of households. Here we can say, do you want a house, do you want a service stand, or do you want a vehicle option? What do you really want as a household on ground level? It's one single integrated database, there's one database for the country, so if we access it for reporting, the draw report, or whatever, we will get to the same answer. It gives us a lot of decision-making capability, and we will have a large reporting and statistics. So short-term immediate impact, allocation of housing opportunities that reduce malpractice and corruption. From move from waiting list or demand database to the NIS register, it's very seamless because it requires the internet connection. You must be able to connect to the internet. You must have attended our training sessions. You must have passed based on your assessment that you have completed. And then we will register you and give you access to make sure that we can continue with this process. From this level, very briefly, Chair, is to say we look at the five main streams of human delivery process. How do the main streams to deliver human settlement on ground level? They are not linear processes, they are all integrated. If we have a look here, we will see in most provinces the housing lease registration process, the owners of it, sits under beneficiary management. So they are the the people that take responsibility to make sure that this program gets implemented. This, the information that's collected via this process in beneficiary management is the first input to planning and budgeting. What we're saying here is, if we understand the needs of a household, we can plan and budget better every year to make sure we address the needs of our citizens. The needs of citizens, it determines the need on a specific human performance. The way that we've done this is a household register the needs, it goes down to an area level, a geographical area level, or a ward level. So when we need to allocate, we do it from that level. Just a preview of how the National Housing Administration system looks like. This is the landing page. If you know the web address and you register, this is how it will look like. It will give you an overview and a graph of the number of questionnaires that have been completed per province. It will also give you ability to draw a report per household to look at the household information that has been registered on the needs register. For example, the interactive report, it depends how you when you hover with your mouse, your pointer. Here we can see what's over Bush Buck Ridge, and it would tell us there is nearly 38,000 households in Bush Buck Ridge that has registered their need for adequate shelter. And this grows on a daily basis as more households register their needs. This class provides us on a provincial level, and we're looking at Northern Cape in this instance, and it shows us that the highest number of households have no income. So again, it helps us with planning, it shows us where there's no income, and it shows us as well the people with the higher income that can qualify for one of our other programs like this, that is above R3,500. It's just a few of the reports. There's other reports that show you people without water, people without electricity, people without sanitation, what type of sanitation do they have access to. This is where we do some pre-cleaning, as where we take an ID number, and it's all automatic, as we can send this ID number to the population register to see if this person is alive, not deceased. Is this a valid ID number? So we get some information from population. We get also some information from PADSEL to see if this person is employed in government. UIF, Government Employee Pension Fund, and as well as the National Database, the control database that makes sure that a household cannot receive a second subsidy. Because if you have registered being on the HSS and you have been approved to benefit from a subsidy, your records get uploaded to the national database, where the national department is the owner of those records. And if you're trying to get approved a second time, that system will decline you and tell you you've already benefited from the approach to benefit. So here we can then see if this person has benefited from this household or is in the process to benefit. The next portion of this is allocation. This is where we look at the allocation guidelines, the policy, and we took the rules off of that policy and we built it into a system. And this example we've used in Northern Cape, we asked the system and say, please select for me the provinces of Northern Cape, which municipalities, Kaikari municipality, and I want a specific town in Northern Cape, and we asked for the town of Cayman. And we know that the way that Northern Cape has sent this information up, there's two areas in Cayman, Cayman and Cayman 1. So these are the households from Cayman and Cayman 1 will be included in this process. It's a new allocation that we want to do. We say we want 100 households to be selected out of, there can be 10,000. And on the left hand side, this is the criteria that we want to use or that's available. Women headed household, child headed household, financial dependent, no income, widow, widowless, disabled person, age members, registration. registration date, that's the date when this household registered in need for adequate shelter. And did not benefit before, that means that the child has never been in the process to apply for a subsidy. And the one that we already moved over is a household with children. Any province where there's an allocation committee now going to sit and they agree on what is the criteria that will be applicable to this specific project. They move the criteria from the left-hand side over to the right-hand side. So you stand on it and you click on the arrow and it will move it to the right-hand side. On this side, you can prioritize it as well to say which one of those criteria has the highest priority. Based on that selection and that you've indicated there, the system will select for you that number of households. So it will give you the ID number of the main household member, their surname, school name, the area, the street name, the house number, and the capture date. And it will tell you to which criteria this household adheres to. The allocation committee then looks at this and agree, and that yes, they agree with this. And with this allocation committee agreement, they give it to the project manager for that specific human settlement project, and they will approach the household to complete subsidy application form. So those will be the people then that will be assisted on the specific project. Very briefly, how does the allocation guidelines look like?
If you may move towards conclusion, really says about time, yeah.
The policy developers, the policy unit within the department of the consultation as well. The accredited features of the strategy, the qualification, the entry level of general criteria of the subsidy scheme to apply, so it does not override this. Priority criteria was introduced, so that's on the left-hand side that we've discussed. Persons registered on the National Housing Needs Register do not automatically qualify for the subsidy. They will be invited after the allocation process to complete subsidy application form, and then they will go through the qualification process or the screening process. It applies to various housing opportunities or various policy programs. It does not apply to certain programs in the National Housing Code. And the guidelines suggest the following role players that might be important, that might be the allocation committee. It's the provincial department of human settlement, the national municipality, the national department is optional, the project managers, and where required, external auditors. The allocation committee might have comprised of the following: two members of the Office of the City Manager, two members from the Provincial Department, and the chair from the Office of the City Manager or the Mayor. The allocation committee decides how to allocate. I'll explain that. The project manager will be handled with each application and applicant that has been allocated, and they will complete subsidy application terms that will be approved and if that qualifies.
Thank you very much. Let me take back to the Honourable Deputy Minister. And I don't know whether you want to conclude before the Deputy Minister comes in. You are fine. Okay, can I allow the Honourable Deputy Minister just to say something before I open for questions?
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Happy with the select committee from the body department to come and speak on these two important issues, particularly the issue of poverty, because it's close to our hearts. And we believe that by giving people study needs, and not on the issue of ownership. Without a title deed, you cannot even transfer that house to your children, as we need. So that is why we continue to seek an opportunity for us to be able to see whether we are making progress on this issue. But even with the national register that is making a big one of the things that we would have loved is to have a register that indicates exactly when the people apply for a house and how many years are people on the waiting list, and why are we giving a person who just applied now while another person who applied longer. We are trying to reach that process to the department. This is just the beginning. But the idea behind it is like to an intervention from national on the issue of poverty, which is in the first in all the sectors.
Thank you very much. DM, can I have hands from the honourable members to interact with the two presentations? You will just indicate which presentation that you're talking to. Honourable Kaula, Honourable Pambo Spokane, Honourable Zwane, Honourable Mukoko, and that also.
Let me start with the last one. So that the house we need very quickly. I am on the issue of the selection criteria and the impact that is likely to have on escalating the prices of the housing unit. Because on the find out if there is that possibility, because currently what the department is doing is you do a bulk of housing in one area, say in one lot, and the priority will be done in that lot. Now, if according to this new format, you find that one person will meet is in that lot, the second one is in that lot, the third one, that lot, does that not have the potential of escalating the unit sizes? So the price will be 50,000, you may end up doubling price according to this new format. My second question directed to the Honourable PM is the question of linkages between departments. This is a very good database if it can be made to be effective across departments. I'm thinking of NSA, which is highly corrupted. This can have the potential of improving corruption if NSPAS will have links with the department in terms of verifying that the information given to NSPAS does comply with what the Department of Housing and the department talk about that, because I'm sure it can minimize some of the problems that NSPAS has. And the last one is to the CEO. That was a very complicated one, but just one question in terms of this. What do not have the owner casualties in rural areas because of the Nama Shah? We are sitting over. How are you going about this one? Does the disadvantage up in Kwazulu Natal in terms of getting pension and stuff like that?
Honorable
Thomas,
presentation. My question is on allocation of the house of the RCP. I want to know, Chairperson, is there collaboration on the allocation of houses between yourself and the Department of Social Development in terms of the disability sector and the elderly? There's a certain effort to check on your registration when you allocate, because there's been complaints of people DM who are acquiring houses being foreigners. I'm talking about the people buying. The policy says you have to have ownership of 8 years before you start selling, and that should happen within 6 months. And also the registration, which I like, is also going to alleviate those problems, because the double dipping that is happening from one province to another province is going to ensure that people are not getting houses from the Eastern Cape to the Western Cape, or the Western Cape to Guadalupe Natal.
So I see this as a way that you go to allocate codes. And if this is happening, what has the FDA been finding to try and remedy the situation? Regarding the people with disabilities and as signatures to the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, I know for a fact that some of the houses that we have seen do allocate specifically paraplegics and paraplegics, and I want to know how have you accommodated, because previously the deaf community has not said the blind, to be specific, the blind in terms of assistive devices have not been accommodated whilst you had access to the Convention on the Rights of People as the Constitution. You have seen those devices in the RDPs, but certain sectors across the disability sector were not accommodated, and we would like to see a fully fledged disability sector accommodated in all aspects. Outside the process, I know you were previously working on that, but outside the process, I thank you.
Hello, Ms. Zorni.
No, thank you, Mr. President. Let me echo the sentiments of other honorable members of the state. Thank you very much for the presentation. They were very informative. And we would have said that we had sufficient time to actually listen and only further on this issue. They are both very, very good. And they are coming in as some kind of new initiative by the department that we want to follow very thoroughly. My question relates to the NIDS register. You have different categories of people that you have NIDS, either active housing NIDS or ordinary shelter. These are two different sections, as I understand the presentation. Now, when you give the presentation, I did not see some of the categories that I would have expected to be there. For instance, Deputy Minister, where I see there is a very clear kind of niche of people, those that are domestic workers, that are not permitted to reside within the residence of the medium, but they don't have a capacity or sufficient money to rent. They end up because they come from the same kind of area. They end up staying as good days, if you see somewhere along the sea, under the trees, they put informal kind of shelters there. You can't, because the area is not in Austin's area or it's not a Gunama Trust area, it's privately owned, you can't sort them out in terms of saying, I am going to request a human settlement to provide shelter for this category of people, because maybe it could be social housing if you were to get paid to sort them out. But they won't be able to pay rent. Meanwhile, you still have to maintain whatever residents may be providing. If you are able to sort them out. It's a very clear kind of set up, and I would say to the department, actually I can see that kind of need. The other need that I think is the need of the military veterans. When the president spoke during the State of the Nation address, he said 500,000. I didn't see that need specified. so that we are sure that they are going to sustain their housing. The coordination of data between provinces, let me put it like that, where a person has expressed a need for a house in one province, they are given a house, they rent it out, they move to another province to register for a new need. I don't know whether they fraud with respect to ID's or what, but there is this that is actually exploiting our own government. these are issues as public representatives are picking up, and we want to be partners with you in addressing them. Because people are looking for houses, but there are people who are exploiting the system when it is not supposed to be the case. Is there a limited number of titles that a person can hold? Can you limit me to the number of titles that a person can hold? Thank you.
When it comes to the human area program, and that's why he's on the Thank you.
So thank you very much, honourable members. I'm not going to come back to our time pleasure. But I just want to say thank you very much from the department, and hoping that this is just the beginning. It's not our last meeting. We are dealing with a very complicated and sensitive matter. All the good work that we have done in building houses is spoiled by this. If we don't get this one right, we'll not be seen doing something to people who really need houses. I think if there's one thing that we must correct is this one, in this administration. We appreciate that the current leadership is trying to do this, because it's very serious. We are from provinces. When you listen to the presentation and think of what is happening there, two different worlds. These are two different worlds. Because you will find that the question that I'm having, where I'm sitting, I'm just raising my issues before you respond. The question that I'm asking myself is that, is this enforceable? Is it working? All these food policies. Because you will find one house is sold to so many people.
One house.
We had a case in Mpumalanga where there was a big fight among the community members, because you find that one person is selling a house to more than 8 people. The government had to intervene, actually one is house. And small some of those people who are occupying those houses, they occupy them illegally. So the rightful owner is not in that house. That's a big challenge. The title deeds. My question is that if I have an approval of a house as a beneficiary because I qualify, but the house ended up being occupied by another person, what happens with the title deeds? My concern, it takes too long to be resolved. We have a case in Mpumalanga, Temazul. It's more than 10 years. Not resolved. And the entire project was illegally occupied. Then what happens with that? It's taking too long to be resolved, like the GM is saying it will never be resolved. Then what happens? The other issue that you will want to request, maybe before that one, it's unfortunate at the end, because we are talking to you, we know that provinces are implementing this. You are very much honest by presenting this policy, because you are at the policy level. But provinces are implementing this and are not here. That is why I'm saying maybe this is the beginning. We might need another meeting where provinces will be present, where the issue of monitoring comes in. The other thing that we would like the department, now that the current leadership is dealing with it, as far as taking the transfers of the pre-1994 houses, assisting municipalities, I agree with you, they don't have enough capacity, even those who have. Some, they don't have capacity at all. Transfer of those houses, it could be frustrating. You can't be now talking about plans 20 years down the line. We're still talking about the plans. It doesn't make sense to those people out there. And it has a bearing to municipalities, I must say, especially those big projects, human settlements, because the land belongs to the municipality. And because of that, the municipality is not getting amarek, because the land belongs to the municipality. But if the houses are transferred to the individual owners, the municipality will be able to get revenue. It's a very complicated and serious matter if you look at it from that angle. We are also taking too long to deal with emergency houses. I don't know why, what happens, but it's one thing that you must raise, because they become part of the list or waiting list. in Western Cape, my Western Cape January, when we were preparing for January 8th, there is a housing project at Khayelitsha. When you enter, I don't know which side of the Khayelitsha, but it's written in this way, housing project. One room. Those people are saying they were there, they were supposed to be moved. 2013. I know it's just one project that I'm talking about. 2013. One room, 10 people or 7 people sharing, adults and children in one room. You cook there, you sleep there, you dine there, you do everything there. What is worse there? Maybe did you have to go and check that project? 10 families are sharing one toilet. Very bad. Let's try and check that one and see how we'll do that. It's not only Western Cape, it's everywhere. I know in Mpumalanga there are people who have been waiting for emergency houses for more than 5 years. The houses were banned, they were given those emergency. Until now they're still staying in those tents. We need to deal with that. We know that's happening at provincial level. I just want to emphasize to what they have just said. Some people in one yard, we have more than 4 RPP houses. I was phoned by some people last week that they have evidence in one family. 1, 2, 3 in one yard. We're not saying they don't qualify, but how does it work?
Mm.
If I'm an elder with my children, why would I want my house to be built in my father's house? Because if really I need a house, I will get my own site, have my family there. It means that what they are saying, that people who don't qualify, who are still young, don't need houses, they're given houses, and those houses are built in this same year. Mm, that's what is happening. The question of what happens to people is also was raised in a way. Who stays? Who are from Mpumalanga? Let me use my province. Mpumalanga, they have their RPP houses, or have it, or they don't have. But they have a machete assaulted. From Mpumalanga, maybe they have their own formal house, a nice house, maybe they don't qualify. But go to Gauteng and erect a shed. Or Jojom. How do we deal with that? What is happening in actual practice? The department at provincial level will say to a municipality, we are giving you 700 units. The municipality will go and identify people, disregard this waiting list, I don't know what you call register, that one. Okay, need register. But the municipalities will go and identify new people. Remember, this is a political tool as well. I would like to be seen as a mayor being delivering. I don't know those people who are in the waiting list. To what extent do we enforce this waiting list? I think that is one thing that as a department we must take a decision on. It must be enforceable, otherwise we'll have a long list which will never be implemented. Then as well, if verification of this, how do we know that these people who are on the register are now have now received houses and we remove them from the register? Maybe we must make it compulsory. When we give this money to provinces and say, this is the money that we're giving you for human settlement, but you make use of this needs register. As much as we know that there will be some requests from somewhere, but at least we must say 40% or 50%, doesn't matter what percent you put, but there must be a guideline. Those people must be coming from the needs register. If I can say Kuma rural areas versus Amako, there is a big challenge there. Traditional leaders feel that they do give Amakaiti digs in rural areas. I know from where I'm coming from. We have more than 500 Amakaiti digs that are supposed to be given to to individual owners, but the chief, they say no, not on my land. So there is that dispute. We need to deal with it, talk to Amakhosi, because this is a property, like you're saying, it's a property. People can change their life out of the property that is given as government. And they can use it to start a business, to say, I do have a property. But because of the issue of Amakhosi, it becomes a problem. These are the issues that I want to raise. We are not expecting you to respond in most of these things. We are saying, go and think about it. If it means that you come back and see, you just tell us what you think you can resolve these matters. Because at policy level, the systems are very good, but they're not implemented. Okay, I don't know who is going to start between the DM and the AG. You will guide us on it.
Provinces in ensuring that in all provinces there are for mental health.
kind of given themselves to be involved in the business of their own house, because it's also part of self-creation. So we do have that sort of fresh program in that direction. It's very, very difficult to monitor the issue of housing subsidy, particularly in the rural areas, because this is corruption around the councillor, where they giving houses to Amazon Bazaar. Out of order, right? Hand over a house to a person who is not even of age to government to create the process. But I think as soon as we get those, they must come to us so that we are able to follow up with the people who have done that allocation, because certainly that's a corruption. There is no way that a person who is already a professional, whatever, have an access to subsidy, because we can't define power. If a person who earns between zero and 600,000, so it should be in that category, not any other person. Any person with an income which is about 2,500 is not entitled to the housing subsidy. So if that is happening, nothing else but corruption. But I agree with you that those are the issues that we need to follow up. It's going to be very, very difficult for us to monitor each and everything that happens in society. But I think members of parliament, those in both constituencies, are better posed to ensure to government that this is not what's happening, because you know what it is to the new documents. That's the issue of administration. As I've said that, how can a person sell a house to more than 8 people? That's corruption on its own. So we would like to have that kind of information coming forward, so that we also have it, a special case in terms of our database, so we can work in terms of that. Now, lastly, the issue of Mpumalanga title deed that I was speaking to. I think one of the things that we need to do now that we are here with the team that does all the title deed issues, to give us the details. I think it's possible that we should lift it up to tell the special attention, maybe it could be resolved in that direction. Oh, the issue of Khayelitsha. You know what? There were fires in Khayelitsha. It was the 1st of January, I think 2012 or 2013. We all went there. CP was there, the minister was there, president was there, the mayor was there, city of Cape Town. When we agreed, this is not a measure, we agreed there was a plan to take those people to Mufasa, a particular land, which was allocated to us at the time, as you mentioned. And we put a team that needs to work with the city to ensure that there is a process of moving those people to the task. You understand? But along the way, that plan is not just to just you can speak better to you because it's an administration. You know exactly that the plan was agreed to at the time. Those people are electing respect in housing that they have for thousands of Malam. It's exactly what happened to the meeting that I was with in Janu yesterday. And the past meeting in Janu of housing. One of the dilemmas that we have with the Janu area, the small area is well located, but unfortunately, people move from everywhere to flock in that place, including people who put houses elsewhere. They come to that place. These are issues of corruption at the end of the day. But those people coming from Mpumalanga, where houses are housing, let me say, we want to increase our end of stock. Because obviously, people want to work in housing, they don't want to house in housing. And then if we get end of stock, people could just rent and go back to their homes where they are. And I think maybe that's the issue that we are in this right now, that we have such the issue of end of stock as money we would like to have. But another issue that we are having here, are people who are moving from, we give a house to them, they go there to share. So there are lots of those things. One person was very vocal in the meeting I was with yesterday. And then there are people who have been handed over a house, but they moved back to the share. And then you're not vocal in the meeting. But we know that you are the one who sold your house. But today you are very vocal and a very distinctive person in it. I think you are one of the people that needs to be arrested. I think as soon as we start arresting the people of France, whatever we do.
practically we know the challenges. So we need to tighten our policy and make sure that the scales of government, they work in unison. There is no way that one layer can be able to do it. We can develop brilliant, clear policies at national level, but the implementation requires scales who are directly dealing with the beneficiaries as a financial management system. So I think it's very important to make that point, and we need to tighten our policy with people and the stakeholders, especially to deal with the corrupt element. That is key in the whole debate of the whole. We'll do that. And the other aspect linked to that shape is this, is the economic environment within which our developers are happening. I think the human settlement is becoming a much more broader mandate, not just to put a house on the roof. It's going to be critical because most of the beneficiaries of our strategic sector of development, which is mainly arts and field workers, are not economically viable citizens of our country. And that is the reality. So when the economy is struck, the reality starts working and people begin to adopt corrupt practices. That's why you have one person selling one house to eight people. One is not justifiable, one is incorrect, but there's an economic reality that the human settlements need to begin to deal with by making sure that where we put our houses and where we expose our people into free houses who are not working at all, we also create a conducive environment for them to be able to sustain the very same product that we give to them. And it's an approach that you are adopting at Chairperson. We don't want to put any more out of the houses where there is no economic conducivity. Because we are setting our people for work.
Yeah.
We are giving them products that they cannot sustain. And we know on the ground what they need to do after. Then it becomes a very unmanageable situation just from that economic perspective for those people. That's why in the 50 catalog projects we are doing, if we want to do massively for the next 4 or 5 years in our term or in your term, is to make sure in each and every project is a very strong economic development component and social distribution. And it cross subsidizes all our developers. Chairperson, the issue that relates to the private land and domestic workers, there are different segments of our development, and one of it is that we always find gaps in our developers that are not catered. And none of it is linked into the particular aspect. What we've been doing with our approach to the department is to make sure that all segments of our society are covered in different forms of our development. What is this financial link, which normally deals with the normal public service, like the police, like the teachers, and the people. We've got the gap of domestic workers who are mainly part of the RPPL for the Secretary of the program, because they earn most of the $3.5 per month and they follow that category. But what has been also been very clear is that we do not educate our people effectively in terms of fundamental education, so they know exactly which category of our delivery model they belong into, so they can be able to access and get into it. So we find that people who qualify for loans, they want to go and fill on RPP and they're outside that particular category, and they must go into fleet and so forth. So we have agreed at TM, as you know, to do a very comprehensive consumer education program for human settlement. So we are able to teach our leaders about what offerings do we have within the human settlement sector. Yeah, so that they can be able to share that information with their community. And people don't find themselves queuing in wrong categories of our community. Some that don't even form part of police, they don't form part of RDP, they must just go to the bank and ask for loans. That's why we have also established a strategic relationship with the Banking Association of South Africa. So it encourages banks as well that those who feel with the category, they are able to assist them and access loans. So it's a very broad offering program that we're doing. And that covers also the issue of domestic workers as well. And we are busy with that program. The ministry has issued the directive for us to do a very general measure is meant to cater for a very short period of time. But you are quite correct that in most instances we find that it takes longer before an identified error to move people into helping dealt with proficiency. And I think in the question of requires that the end was referring to, it was a very difficult situation because you have different parties involved in academics are not sharing the same model. And that has created a problem for us. And we have to keep on intervening now and again to keep directing in terms of what needs to happen. And in this instance, we needed a president to be the one that comes and issue a directive to the National Department of Human Services. And then for us to intervene to the province and the province to the people. And then by the time we get into the model for delivery, it's quite a challenge. So, but we are handling it through our intervention strategy, and we are trying to instruct the cities because the very senior city that becomes finally in charge of ensuring that whatever is in put in place is working accordingly, and the alternative arrangements are also implemented as well. Hence, we end up with a problem in this situation. I think from my side, the other issue that I think we will not show how to take it out.
Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think maybe just one or two things.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dion. Thank you, DG. In terms of the government trust land, it is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
All the land is not on the credit, it's not divided. The banks are not able to get a permission currently with the PTO. But we are looking at this process. Deal with a specific item and find the reason to work. So land can be sold only after the PTO frame the clause that actually be met and illegal on the whatever that has been done before that. We have found instances where there were fraudulent letters signed by the older department members to waive such frame the clause. But the most of the sales that happen in this environment is actually only between seller buyer, shopkeeper, and it's an occupancy. That is going to be a cause of beneficiary on the competition, and that will be an occupational issue. I think it's a member of the very issue of the project. It's going to be there for a few years. We have to deal with another issue in the same event. So, those types of these guys have an endorsement with no conveyance for the difference in part of the type of the not part of the occupation of the protection party. Banks cannot provide a collateral or looking for solutions for that in terms of that. And, there is important measures that can be made. We are working now with the conveyancing fraternity so that we actually expose situations where these titles are being tampered, but it's quite a long process. I believe that the people who are aiming to defeat the project, some of the process would actually continue with that. In terms of the fast track on the 394 stuff, we have got systems within the province specifically focused on that to achieve exactly the goal of the day. That we actually prioritize them, like the minister said, prioritize that to the low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But the way we have to see beneficiaries, or also when you look at the market, not too fast for that process, I think we are actually doing it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. There was, I don't know whether you did want to follow up.
No, thank you, Chairperson. DG, I just wanted to clarify this issue of the domestic workers. They are one which is, I did not put it as clearly as I should have. They reside within the Iwanyama Trust. There will be projects that are given to impose of the area, and they benefit from them.
Mm.
But they have to leave their home and go to the town and work there. Because maybe the distance between where they work and their home would be about 100 kilometers or 200, whatever the case may be. When they come to the city to secure employment, they cannot reside with the employer because the employer doesn't want them anywhere near their place. So they have now to get some kind of accommodation. You can't build social housing for them with the expectation that they're going to rent. They can't afford rent from their earnings. So they are just in limbo. Where do you place them? They resort to going and staying under the tree.
Okay. In the the human settlement in Daba that we had, is it in Robert? The minister spoke to this matter. She said in the past there was a room for the aunt,
yeah,
and a room for his aunt.
Yeah.
It was there. She was speaking to the people who are dealing with the property that it should be considered as compulsory that when you build a house, that room must be there. She spoke about it during that in but I just want to, I don't know if CG want to come back, but I think she spoke in details on that matter because she's correct. It makes sense, they can't rent and they don't have relatives there. Yeah, it's something that we must really take it serious and follow to what the minister said. I just want to close and conclude by saying thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm hoping that you will take this further. All what we discussed here, like I was saying, this is just the beginning, but we must conclude this matter before the end of this administration. Thank you very much, Dean, for your time. Thank you.
Okay.
The meeting is over.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
This
them the apple tiger.